Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Constellation Studios, a mixed-use artist workspace for all types of printmaking and paper products, featuring printing presses, bookmaking, type shop, and wet paper studio. For info, constellation-studios.net. And Nebraska Repertory Theater, presenting Mother Courage by Bertolt Brecht. A mother and her three children strive to make a living during the madness of the American Civil War. Now through November 18th at the Temple Building on UNL's campus. For showtimes and tickets, leadcenter.org.
Good morning and welcome to Friday Live here on NET Radio, live from the Mill in Lincoln's Haymarket. I'm Genevieve Randall. I'll talk with the internationally known Gabriela Montero, known for her piano improvisations. In addition to her classical skills, we'll also learn about the next installment in the Plains Writers series at Wayne State College and their poetry slam. Plus, we'll meet the current artist in residence at the Cornhusker Marriott in Lincoln and talk with a musician who's coming to Loop City for a presentation of Polish folk music. You can join us online this morning as well. We stream audio on our website each and every week at netnebraska.org. We start this morning with a concert from the First Presbyterian Choir and the Union College UC Singers with narrator Pippa White. They come together on the next Arts for the Soul series concert to remember victims of violence. Brian Fultner with Arts for the Soul and narrator Pippa White are here today to talk about the event and the importance of remembering. Welcome.
Thank you
for having us.
Good to be here.
Which seems even more appropriate each and every day as there are more and more victims of violence in the news. It's just incredible.
Yes, there are.
Give us the overview of this performance on Sunday.
Well, the idea for this started months and months ago after another event that occurred in the news. I guess I had this idea, you know, as a musician, sometimes you wonder, what can I do with all of this? You're confronted with all of these horrific events. And so this is not about finding answers necessarily or dealing with solutions to the problems, or it's not about politics or any of that. It's more about comfort, hope, and healing for people and how we can deal with these events as individuals and as a community and how we can move forward.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you talk a little bit about, there's a veteran tribute and World War I commemoration portion of this event?
Yes, since it ended up being on Sunday, which is Veterans Day and actually is the 100th anniversary of the end of fighting in World War I.
Right.
So obviously the idea of violence certainly can play into the idea of war as well. And so we've folded those events into this as well so that there's a section in there on World War I and war, and so a remembrance of those kinds of acts of violence and how we deal with those as well.
And Pippa, can you share with us, are you storytelling or is this a different kind of narration for you?
This is different. Yes, it is. This is all Brian's script and I just have the easy job. I come in and read it and introduce some of the music, and he has intertwined poetry and some speeches, some wonderful inspiring speeches. And so it's going to be my privilege, but I got the easy job.
reading a script.
Oh, I understand. Kind of, yeah, that's right.
You've been involved with a number of these events. How is that for you?
Oh, I feel very privileged and honored to be involved in so much. It's my good luck.
There are several requiems when it comes to the music on the program and a setting of Psalm 23. What is that particular psalm about, and what is the setting, or who did the setting?
The one on Psalm 23 is by Thomas Matthews, so it's with choir and organ. It's the basic 23rd Psalm text that everyone knows very well, and that's in the section. We start out the music of different excerpts of requiems of John Rutter, Fauré, Andrew Lloyd Webber. Parts of those are put together with some other music as well as to form a requiem. And in between each movement, then Pippa will be reading sections of text that go along with those and play into each other. And then we have an instrumental Kaddish, which is the Jewish prayer for the dead, kind of a time of contemplation. And then we go into what we're calling the music of comfort, hope, and healing. So there are some, you know, heavy parts to this. I mean, it's a heavy topic. But there are also, I hope, as we move through it, that it is something of comforting and hope as we try to move forward.
Yeah. Why do you think it's important to remember?
Well, I think we have to kind of come to grips with all these things ourselves. And it's not all just about victims of violence either. There's also, I talk about in there, for anyone who's lost someone, because it's a very small and unfortunately growing number of people who have been touched by violence, but we've all been touched by losing someone in other ways, and maybe not quite as dramatic in effect, but certainly as deeply touching to us. And so this really is for anyone who has lost someone, and how you move forward from those events when you have been affected so deeply.
There's a lot of variety in the evening that Brian has prepared.
I was just telling my wife last night, I was working on the script again and updating it from recent events, because I just list of some of the dates and places, and I said, it's unbelievable since I've started this how many times I've had to update this list of locations, and it's really been sad in that respect.
That's interesting. Well, anytime we kind of journal or keep a measure in some way of anything, I think then that just puts a spotlight on how prevalent it is. Yeah. Interesting. Well, Brian Faulkner and Pippa White have been my guests here this morning, here to talk about the next Arts for the Soul series concert in remembrance of victims of violence, and that is this Sunday, 7 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church in Lincoln. The program will include music from Requiems of John Rutter, Gabriel Fauré, and Andrew Lloyd Webber, and much more. Thanks so much for talking with me this morning.
Thank you, Hamas.
Good to be here. Thank you, Genevieve.
There's much more to come here on NET Radio's Friday Live. In about 7 minutes, we'll hear who the guest authors are in the next Plains Writers Series readings at Wayne State College. This is Friday Live on NET Radio. Introduction to the piano was when she was 7 months old. By the time she was 18 months old, she could play the entire melody of the Venezuelan national anthem. She's outspoken about the Venezuelan government. She has a talent for improvising, but kept that talent hidden until she met Marta Ergerich. I'm describing my next guest here on Friday Live, pianist Gabriela Montero. She'll be taking the stage this Tuesday at the Leeds Center for Performing Arts in a piano performance that will feature works by Mozart and Beethoven, as well as her improvisations. Gabriela Montero, such a pleasure to have you on Friday Live this morning.
Likewise, it's a pleasure, and it'll be my first time in Nebraska, so I'm really looking forward to that.
I read that your first introduction to the piano was when you were just 7 months old.
My grandmother, for some reason, insisted that I receive this little toy piano that wasn't meant for me, but for my cousin, for my first Christmas, and she kind of harassed my parents until they put the piano in my crib. That was my first Christmas gift. So my mom would sing to me every night to put me to sleep, like most Venezuelan moms do. And my parents noticed that I would spend hours at the piano as a baby trying to pick out the melodies. And that's what happened. By the age of 18 months, I was playing all of these songs I heard by ear, including the national anthem of Venezuela.
Well, and I imagine that playing all of that music by ear is what helped you with your ability to create these improvisations you're known for.
Well, you know, improvisation, it's really like composing on the spot. It's not embellishment, it's not variations, it's a very complex process. And I always did that since I was a little girl. It's a language that I've always spoken. As a matter of fact, I thought everyone improvised, and it wasn't until a few years back that I realized that that this is something, you know, that's kind of rare in today's world. It it was common in the time of Mozart and Bach and Beethoven and Chopin. That was part of their language. But nowadays, I think we've just become very closed up in a way. So I always improvise. It was my way of saying hello to the piano. It was my way of steering my emotions and my experiences onto this metaphorical language of music. And then I stopped improvising in public for many years. I was told not to improvise by a teacher I had as a young girl. And only my friends and family knew that I improvised. And it was the wonderful Martha Argerich who heard me at age 31 and just looked at me and plainly said, "Why aren't you doing this and sharing this with the world?" And that was enough for me to say, "You're right, yes." And that's how I began to do full improvisation recitals and half recitals improvised since then.
You know, I think when a lot of people grow up playing the piano and learning from music only, it's a little scary to improvise.
Well, for me, it's the most liberating experience. I always kid around saying that it's like jumping off a cliff without a parachute, but knowing that you're going to fly and you're going to be fine. And I love that liberating experience of just allowing it to happen without controlling it or planning it or anything. Nothing exists when I put my hands at the piano and I improvise.
What was it like playing at Barack Obama's inauguration?
It was incredibly cold and incredibly exciting. I really felt honored to be a part of that historic moment. And I, one of the things that I found most moving was to see not only that massive crowd there in support for what was a healing moment in the history of the country, but also the joy and the incredible inclusiveness of the whole moment. And people were ecstatic, and I was very, very happy to be a part of that.
What's one of your favorite places that music has taken you?
There's nothing like playing at home, of course, Caracas, which is where I'm from, and I haven't been able to return in the last 8 years. I miss that terribly. But there are places like the Wigmore Hall in London that I love. I just played at the Elbphilharmonie in Hamburg, the new iconic hall, my own piano concerto, actually, and it was just such a thrill and such a wonderful response. That's an incredible place. There are so many different places, but my favorite places are more to do with the audiences that are there receiving what you give them, and they give back in their attention and in their love for what you're trying to gift to them in that moment.
You've been outspoken about the Venezuelan government. I wonder if you could talk just a little bit about that aspect of your life as a musician. How involved are you with politics? How does it affect your career?
The last almost 10 years, I've been denouncing the regime that has been in place in Venezuela for the last 20 years. What people have to understand is that the Venezuelan situation is not a matter of left or right. It's even gone beyond the political spectrum. It's a humanitarian crisis created by what is a narco-mafia regime. So this is not about, you know, colors in political terms. This is about a criminal gang, basically, that have, taken a hold of Venezuela. It has affected my life tremendously in every respect. I feel I lead a double life, one of being a concert artist and composer, and one of being a political and human rights activist. I think that in times of great injustice and oppression and suffering, there is absolutely no justification for silence, and I've used my voice as powerfully as I can. And it's affected my career because in the classical world, we don't speak of such things. In the rock and pop and folk, in visual arts world, the social commentary is something that's an integral part of the art and of the nature of the art. But in the classical world, unfortunately, we shy away from it. So I'm trying to inspire others to do the same and to speak up when we need more voices.
Hearing you talk, just briefly, you reminded me of something that an audience member once asked at a talk that was being given before a concert, which was, how can we go on stage and play, you know, music by Mozart and Beethoven and spend this time with music when there are so many important things going on in the world? What would you say to that person?
Well, I've realized that music has become a tool for me, not only... of course, giving joy and giving beauty, but also of speaking out about issues that need to be brought to awareness. And for me, music has become a tool of information and a tool for creating empathy. So I do agree with what that audience member was saying and how he feels. I think music without a message is vacuous. It can be wonderful to sit there, but when there are so many things that are wrong in this world, and if we have the opportunity to speak about them through metaphor and through words in our concerts, in our platforms as public people, I think we absolutely have a responsibility to do so. And I guess that's the way that I reconcile what I'm doing on stage as an artist when the world seems to be in a really bad place. And I hope I'm helping to a transition into something better, and at least calling out, you know, the bad guys and the things that happened that shouldn't be happening.
Some might argue hearing Mozart or Beethoven, like you're going to play at the Lead Center, it's a nice way to push the refresh button before going back to all of those other things.
We need music, we need beauty, we need tools that will bring us back to the aesthetics, you know, to what is important, to how we communicate, to who we are as human beings. And you know, I think in a world where we're at risk of losing that, and every bit that we do to create emotion and to create meaning, I think is very, very important.
Gabriela Montero joined me to talk about her upcoming performance at the Lead Center this Tuesday. In addition to her playing classical works, the audience will be able to see music come to life as she creates improvisations based on themes given by the audience. And again, that concert is at 7:30 on Tuesday at the Lead Center. Gabriela, thank you so much. I've enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you so much. Likewise. Thanks very much.
This is Friday Live on NET Radio and netnebraska.org. I'm Genevieve Randall. Walter Echohawk and his family have deep roots in Nebraska and the Great Plains. His new book, Sea of Grass, traces his Pawnee ancestry back 10 generations by combining real people and events with Native stories.
It's a fascinating story, and it's a page-turner, and I'm really happy that he was able to document this history of Nebraska that nobody knows about because, you know, the Pawnee aren't here anymore.
Guest reviewer Shirley Snavey, executive director of Vision Maker Media, reviews Sea of Grass by Walter Echohawk on this week's All About Books. Listen online at netnebraska.org/allaboutbooks. Next, I'm joined by Chad Christensen, Associate Professor of Language and Literature at Wayne State College. He joins me to talk about the Plains Writers Series and a poetry slam featuring authors. They'll give readings on Thursday, November 15th at 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. in the Humanities Lounge as part of the Plains Writers Series. And then later at 7 p.m., the Max Bar and Grill in downtown Wayne will be the site for Poetry Slam XL. Chad Christensen is also WSC Press Managing Editor. Chad, thanks for joining me.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having us.
Some visiting Great Plains authors reading in the afternoon on Thursday. What opportunities does that provide for students at WSC?
It gives students a chance to probably skip class, maybe. I don't know. But it gives them an opportunity to come down to the lounge and get to enjoy some local writers. It's usually our whole emphasis has always been on bringing in regional writers with new books and giving them an opportunity to read. So it helps students get a chance to see that there are people actually still around that are writing books and putting stuff out. So it's usually a really great experience.
Now, I noticed Amy Plutner is on the list. She's from the Lincoln area, also a former Wayne State College professor. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the other guests you have coming?
Yeah, Amy Plutner is going to be coming up. We did her book a couple of years ago as a Clefcorn series, and people loved it. And she came with another book, and we're trying to have it out by the time of the event. But to be honest, it's getting kind of close, and I'm not sure if it's going to happen, but she has this fantastic new book called Points of Entry, and it's going to hopefully be out. If not, she'll definitely be reading from it. And then we also have J.B. Brummels is a retired former creative writing teacher up here at Wayne. We haven't had him here reading because he started it back in 1977, and so he's been doing this a long time, so I've sort of taken the reins, and I'm doing it now, but it's going to be neat to actually have him come with his new book and read at the series he started.
Yeah, and I also see Barbara Schmitz and Jake Stewart on the lineup.
Barbara Schmitz, we published her book in the spring, and What Bob Says Some More. She originally published What Bob Says as sort of a, I think it was a chapbook several years ago, and she added a bunch of new poems and wanted to, I think the publisher is no longer around, so we kind of took it over. She added a bunch of new poems with some artwork in it, and we put it together. It looks fantastic, and they're wonderful poems. So we haven't had her here since we got the book out, so this will be another opportunity for another WSC Press author to read some of their new stuff. So that'll be exciting. She's coming from Norfolk. We also will have Jake Stewart. He's currently teaching here at Wayne State as well as a grad student, and he has a new book coming out called Whiskey Vengeance, which is kind of a novel in verse with a noir type of twist. So he got that published here in the spring as well, so we're really excited to hear from him.
After the 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. readings in the Humanities Lounge there on campus, there is an evening poetry slam. How do you describe that event to those who've never been?
It's been growing and growing. I first went to one in, I think it was like 2003, 2004, when I was actually a student. And at the time, you know, it was still kind of big. I thought it was pretty big. I'd never been to a slam before. I didn't know what it was. What I found out, it was just a wonderful opportunity, a great atmosphere to get up and just read poetry, any wild poetry. And that was many years ago. But we moved. Now we're at the Max Bar and Grill, and we pretty much fill the back room. It's grown so much. It's just packed. The neat thing about it is we give a wide range of students. It isn't just, you know, language and literature people. We get a lot of these students are taking creative writing classes, part of the gen ed, and they're experiencing this, and they come down. So we have a wide range of backgrounds and people coming, and they're really surprised. I'm not sure what they think they're going to see, but when they get down there, it's a warm, open, unusual event, and it's a lot of fun.
And for those who want to participate, are there any requirements for participating?
Again, all of these events are open to the public, but if you want to read for the event that night, there is a registration fee, and you need to have 4 poems, and the registration starts around 6 o'clock. And it's usually a good idea to get there early if you actually want to have a table or a seat, because it gets pretty packed. We also, we usually do a little musical entertainment beforehand from 6 to 7. We have Eddie Elpers and Vito Cole, and they're going to be playing some music beforehand, so it's a good time.
Anything else about the Plains Writer Series or the Poetry Slam you'd like to mention?
You know, we do this 4 times a year, and I never get tired of it. We've had some repeat people come back. They get new books out, but it's neat to see some of the regional poets and writers come and read their stuff. Every time I think it's going to kind of get old and tired, it doesn't. We get new faces, new people in here. The crowd kind of gives them support, and then they come down to the slam, and it's a big celebration. And I think J.B. will know, Lisa Salmon said, poetry is the winner. It's a neat event. A whole day is just a lot of fun.
Chad Christensen is associate professor at Wayne State College. He joined me to talk about Nebraska poets sharing their work at readings on Thursday, November 15th at 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. in the Humanities Lounge, and then the Poetry Slam, which takes place at 7 p.m. at Max Bar and Grill. Chad, thanks so much.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Serving your community anywhere that might be, NET Radio is Nebraska's public radio network. Online, netnebraska.org. sure to join us in Lincoln for Friday Live next week as we broadcast from NET at 1800 North 33rd Street with special musical guests the Talbot Brothers, Hope Dunbar, and composer and percussionist Michael Fitzsimmons. We'll have refreshments at 8:30 a.m. and, as usual, the show starts at 9 a.m. Tom Myers, a Nebraska artist, joins me now to talk about the Artist-in-Residence program at the Lincoln Cornhusker Marriott Hotel. He is the current Artist-in-Residence. The next Artist-in-Residence program will run April 2019 through March 2020. Tom is the third Artist-in-Residence at the hotel. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
I'm so glad to have you here. Can you talk a little bit about your what your role is as an Artist-in-Residence there?
My role is to exist in the little glass box at the back of the atrium there and allow people to observe what happens in the life of an artist. That's a little poetic, but I work on things. I'm able to work on my own things. I can work on things for the hotel. A large part of what I do, though, is interacting with guests and visitors. And I get a lot of them back there.
I imagine they're a little surprised to find an artist space in the hotel sometimes.
I think it's unusual. I think it's rare. I think it's a great enlightened idea, mind you. But yeah, they're surprised, and they want to talk. It's it's been really
cool, positive
so far.
Now, some of the things you've done as part of your artist in residency recently, you led a crowdsourced mega portrait event, which consisted of 384 squares. And then before that, you hosted a Frankenstein art lesson. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what those were and how you came up with those ideas.
Okay. The Frankenstein lesson just was apropos of Halloween, and it was just a little study of using lights and darks to approximate three dimensions on a face. The mega portrait was the exciting one for me. It was a reference to... the work of Chuck Close. Are you familiar with that name?
I've heard the name.
Okay, he's a renowned American painter who made giant canvases of portraits of people doing one square inch at a time.
That's amazing.
Do one square inch, finish that, do the next square inch. Never any virtuoso brush marks on the page. So I did the same thing, but I got a local volunteer, a lovely young woman named Allison Hill, volunteered to be photographed. We took her photograph, blew it up, cut it into tiny squares, and then participants would draw a square out of a box. The square on the back of it had a letter and a number corresponding to coordinates on a giant sheet of paper, and they would go to that square and draw it. People took it very seriously. It was
that's so cool.
Yeah, it was a wonderful thing. It took too long. It took over 3 months. But it's not easy to get people to commit, particularly when the thing began to look good.
Yeah.
People had to risk failing, I guess, to participate.
You bet. Why did you decide in the first place to apply for the Marriott's Artist in Residence program, and how did you hear about it?
Yeah, I heard about it from a friend who said I'd be good for it. I thought Artist-in-Residence always sounds like a young kid, like a grad student. And I'm a little older than that. So, but I put together a packet with the help of my daughter, Emily, who smoothed things considerably, and presented that. And then the longer the process went, the more I wanted to do it. And the more people I met there, the more I thought it was a good thing. And then I got interviewed. And I think it was at the interview that they realized that I was able to talk.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of what I do, is I have to interact with guests, both listen and explain, and then they selected me.
Now, some of the previous artists have used different techniques, so I imagine you get to talk about the kind of art that you do and the techniques that you use. So explain that to our listeners, then, as you've been explaining to hotel guests.
And I think it's been deliberate on the part of the hotel to select someone different each time. The first one was Margaret Berry. She did encaustic, which you may be familiar with. The second was Nicole Battelle, and she did makes paper dresses and paper flowers and paper art of all kinds. Beautiful stuff. Couldn't be more different from what I do. And I'm a real, you know, middle-of-the-road, conventional, old-fashioned painter, drawer, relying mainly on realism.
Yeah, I was telling you before the show started, I first opened up your website, and the very first picture I saw, I thought, no, that's got to be in the southern part of the state.
Right.
It was definitely, I could tell, like I'd been there along, trying to think of the highway that runs through McCook. It looked like it was sort of that southern area with the canyons and everything.
And, of course, you were right. It was along the southern, the Kansas-Nebraska border, taken. Those pictures are taken specifically to turn into paintings.
Now, really quickly, as part of your duties as artist in residence are coming to an end here shortly. Just a few months. I know. It's a few months away. You'll be creating a legacy piece, and that is being created for permanent display within the hotel. What piece will that be, or is it a surprise?
It'll be a surprise to me soon. I've got some ideas. Uh-huh. I don't really know what it'll be yet.
Okay.
But it'll be big and wonderful.
That'll be cool to be part of that legacy of pieces now building up there.
I mean, it's such a great building.
Yeah.
You want to hang things in there.
Awesome. Tom Myers, a Nebraska artist, was here today to chat with me about the Lincoln Cornhusker Marriott's Artist in Residence program. You can also link through to more information about that on our website.
Oh, right. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that was included here.
Absolutely.
You can email, I highly recommend this, by the way, to any of you artists out there that would like to spend time there. It has been a great gift to me as a professional and as a person to have this place at my disposal, and a great organization headed by the lovely Susan Madsen. So you can email an application request to artistinresidence@thecornhusker.com.
All right.
The deadline for that is December 1st, 2018. And again, I think it's really worthwhile.
So any artists hearing this chat right now before December 1st, and if you forget that address, you can also link through to more about the program and everything you hear about here on Friday Live by going to the Friday Live page. I'll give you that website in just a second. Tom, thanks.
Right. Thank you for having me.
And that web address, netnebraska.org/radio. Again, netnebraska.org/radio, and look for the page for Friday Live. Friday Live has even more in the arts and humanities to share with you in our weekly podcast, the Friday Live Extra. This week's podcast will be available later this afternoon for a conversation with writer, composer, and producer Lee Aronson, who has written for the sitcoms Two and a Half Men and The Big Bang Theory, and who will also be in Lincoln for an event at the Ross Media Arts Center. Meet him and learn more in the Friday Live Extra by downloading wherever you get your podcasts or listen online at our website, netnebraska.org/radio.
We'll have a barrel of fun. Roll out the barrel. We've got the blues on the run. Sing boom terrero. Sing out a song of good cheer. Now's the time to roll the barrel, 'cause the gang's all here.
To come on Friday Live, a cowboy Christmas near Menominee, and in the next 20 minutes, we'll meet the featured soloist on the next Lincoln's Symphony Orchestra concert. Next here on the show, I'm joined by a member of the Lightning Bugs. The music that you were hearing under my voice there just a second ago was performed by them. We heard the Beer Barrel Polka there. They play in Red Cloud at the Opera House tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. The full band is Reynold Peterson, Jim Pfeiffer, and Steve Hansen. And Jim joins me here to talk about their concert tomorrow. Good morning.
Good morning to you. It's great to be with you, as always.
So what's the furthest you've gone for a gig?
We play in the Nebraska Arts Council Touring Arts Program and have been at times on the Mid-America Arts Alliance thing, too. So that'll take us hither and yon. We've played one time we were driving across, I think we were going to a gig in Sydney and kind of got out the Nebraska map and just started looking at all the little towns in Nebraska that we have played. They're always fun shows to do because people come out, and some places we've been back to several times. By now we've made good friends in little towns playing shows there and stuff, so it's good fun.
You kind of got your start that way, playing in small towns around the state.
I grew up in a small town, and this was, you know, kind of back in the late 60s and early 70s, and like so many people. I started in a garage band. You know, we played rock and roll and old soul tunes. At that time, what was really popular with the bands that were playing dances and stuff was, you know, Wilson Pickett and Sam and Dave and Otis Redding, James Brown. So we were these young Nebraska boys trying to sound soulful.
Now, have the Lightning Bugs played the Red Cloud Opera House before?
This will be the Lightning Bugs' first time to Red Cloud. Steve and I have been to Red Cloud before with one of our bluegrass bands back in the day, but the Bugs haven't been there yet, so we're looking forward to it. We always are glad to do things with the Nebraska Arts Council, and the Willa Cather Foundation is, you know, sponsoring this. That's obviously a really cool organization.
Well, I'd love to hear another little excerpt from your recordings from your CD. I think, what should we hear, Glowworm?
People often ask us, you know, why do you call yourselves the Lightning Bugs? And we do a lot of tunes by the Mills Brothers. This is a 1952 gold record for the Mills Brothers. But, you know, there really aren't what we call glowworms in Nebraska, or maybe fireflies, but mainly in Nebraska, it's the Lightning Bugs. So we took our name from this song and then kind of put a Nebraska spin on it.
Shine, little glowworm, glimmer, glimmer, shine, little glowworm, glimmer, glimmer, lead us lest too far we wander. Love's sweet voice is calling yonder. Shine, little glowworm, glimmer, glimmer, hey there, don't get dimmer, dimmer, light the path below above and lead us on to love.
Just a little excerpt there from Glowworm with a performance from the Lightning Bugs. I've got Jim Pfeiffer from the band with me. How long does it take the band to come up with an arrangement for any particular song?
Oh, I mean, it kind of depends. Some things just seem to kind of fall into place. By now, we've been singing and playing together since the mid-80s, and we kind of have a pattern. Reynolds typically is kind of the lead vocal, Steve's the tenor, and I'm the baritone, and so our parts kind of fall into place. We put a lot of little Lightning Bug kinds of things in it. You know, we scat sing, and we the Mills Brothers started with just the four brothers and their father playing guitar, and that was during an era when all the bands had horns. So to kind of accommodate for that, they did horns with their mouths. Since we're Lightning Bugs, we call it buzzing. But
of course.
So we'll put horn parts in our songs, and then harmony vocals, and of course Steve is a great guitar player, and so putting in different solos and stuff. It's just kind of a matter of things falling into what feels comfortable.
And how many instruments do each of you play, and what are you bringing with you to Red Claw?
I'll be playing upright bass with the Lightning Bugs, and I'll bring just a full-size acoustic bass because we oftentimes bring acoustic instruments. Before we play the main concert at the Opera House, we'll be going to the Heritage Nursing Home there. Almost every time when we do the Arts Council stuff, we like to do an acoustic show, just the instruments only. You're not setting up microphones and stuff like that, and just go in and do some songs and sing along stuff at a senior facility or nursing home or something like that. That's kind of
nice.
A little thing that's become kind of a part of what we do when we go out in the state.
I always find at some of those gigs, there's someone there who's a musician or who was a musician themselves, and they really appreciate talking with other musicians. Have you had experiences like that?
Absolutely. Usually it's guys, not always. Sometimes it'll be a woman, and they'll come up and go, I used to play in a dance band, you know, or something like that. And we've had some cool experiences in Albion, the guy who is the head of the local arts council there, a guy named Paul Hosford, a really good guitar player. And so we played at a nursing home, and his dad was there, and his dad was a piano player. And so his dad played piano, Paul played guitar, and then the Lightning Bugs. When we got done, Paul told us, that's the first time I've ever played with my dad.
Oh, that's so cool.
We just have lots of fun little things. Somebody will be kind of sitting in the audience and looking kind of sleepy, and or like they're not kind of really connecting with us, and then you play a certain song, whatever it is, a song that they dance to or a song that they remember from earlier days in their life, and it's kind of like flipping a switch and the lights come on. And those are really swell moments for us. I mean, you know, you kind of see something like that, it makes you feel good.
with a sound akin to the Mills Brothers or maybe the Ink Spots. The Lightning Bugs will pay tribute to masters like Duke Ellington, Nat King Cole. They might even play a Western swing tune. You never know. They will play at the Red Cloud Opera House, and that's tomorrow evening. That concert is at 7:30 p.m. Jim, it's great to see you again.
Great to see you, as always.
Thank you. We'll have a link to more information about that concert on our website as well. As we go out on another Lightning Bug track with Satin Doll, head over to netnebraska.org/radio and look for the Friday Live page.
Cigarette holder, which wigs me over her shoulder. She digs me.
Be sure to check out the arts calendar on our website, both to make plans and to add your event. The address is netnebraska.org/radio. Just click events. Here's some highlights. In Chadron tonight, Chadron State College presents the Wind Symphony and Community Band Concert. That's at 7 p.m. Wayne State College presents a handful of recitals coming up, saxophones and a vocalist tomorrow, and a trumpet recital at 5 p.m. on Sunday. Plus, the Wind Ensemble gives a concert Monday evening at 7:30. And Tuesday evening in Holdridge, the Tassel Performing Arts Center presents a winner of the silver medal at the International Chopin Piano Competition, among other honors, Charles Richard Hamelin. His performance starts at 7:30 p.m. For more information about these and other events, visit our website, netnebraska.org/radio.
Support for humanities-related programming on NET Radio comes from Humanities Nebraska. Community conversations about the media's impact on our democratic process, titled An Issue of Trust, will be held in six cities across the state this October and November. For details, humanitiesnebraska.org. And support for programming comes from Cornerstone Bank, a family-owned bank providing custom investments, trust, and estate planning services since 1882 with 40 Central Nebraska locations. CornerstoneConnect.com. Cornerstone Bank, building trust on a solid foundation.
Nebraska Jazz Orchestra begins their 2018-19 season with a tribute to Stan Kenton. The concert will feature trumpeter Justin Kaiser, originally from Sloan, Iowa, but who now calls Sioux City his home. He has toured the U.S. and Europe and now plays and teaches in the Midwest. The NJO concert is Thursday, November 15th at 7:30 p.m. at the Cornhusker Marriott in Lincoln. And Justin joins me now. Justin, it's great to meet you.
Good to meet you, too.
How did you get invited to play with NJO?
Originally, I played with them for the first time when I was like 14 years old. I think mainly because my older brother had, he was very talented as a young musician. And so luckily I got the same invite and was able to play with them. And I guess I've played with them maybe twice since as a featured artist. And yeah, and then here I am again. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Who's your older brother, and what does he play?
Ryan, and he's a trumpet player. He plays with Wynton Marsalis and the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra for about, I guess, probably about 25 years now.
So there's a lot of jazz in your family. What is the musical influence there?
Records. In Iowa, that's all there is. No. well, I guess my dad was a band director in Sloan originally, and he got into jazz by hearing the great Clark Terry play trumpet. He put on a concert at a local college. And then as he got into it, you know, he got a pretty good record collection going. And when my older brother started playing trumpet, he kind of gravitated towards that. And me being the youngster, you know, and hearing that all the time, I guess it was a given that I would too.
How does your dad feel about both of you having a career in music?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think he was very encouraging. I mean, like, his parents were musicians, his grandparents were musicians, and both sides of the family, you know. So, I mean, not professionally, but, you know, everybody played. You know, I think he always just encouraged to go for it.
Now, for the program with the Nebraska Jazz Orchestra, what music is on the program?
I can't remember. I'll have to check the email. No, there's a couple of original tunes by some friends of mine. I was in the Navy Commodores premier jazz band for a few years and met some great arrangers there. And so I'm playing a couple of those tunes and a couple of the tunes that I played on my very first concert with NJO. Clark Terry tune entitled Sheba. What else? I don't know. You probably don't want to hear me ramble on trying to think of the tunes.
Did I read that you're bringing some of your own charts for the band?
No, not my originals, no. It's originals of, you know, that nobody's ever heard before. Or very few people.
Do you arrange stuff for yourself, though?
No, they write and arrange the tune. Like, a couple of them were written for me. It's that kind of thing. So when I say original, I mean not a standard jazz tune, not a jazz standard. It's an, you know, a new original tune by somebody. This time, not me, unfortunately.
Now, after your gig with Nebraska Jazz Orchestra coming up on the 15th, what's ahead for you?
Good question. I'm hoping for more gigs and hanging out with my son.
I've been talking here with Justin Kaiser. He is a guest trumpeter on the NJO concert Thursday, November 15th at 7:30 p.m. in Lincoln. Justin, nice to talk with you. Thanks for taking some time.
You too. Thank you.
This is Friday Live on NET Radio and NETNebraska.org. The voice there of Jan Schifferl from her CD, The Game Horse, the beginning of her track, Where Heaven is Close. Jan is a musician and rancher from Northeast Nebraska, and she joins me not only to talk about her music, but also about Cowboy Christmas there at the Schifferl Ranch, coming up November 24th through the 25th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. each day. Jan, welcome to Friday Live.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Now, this is your 17th annual Cowboy Christmas at the ranch.
It is. We've been doing this for quite a while. However, it's grown quite a bit since when we first started. We didn't really intend at the beginning for it to be what it is now. So it's grown over the years.
You're hosting arts and crafts from over 50 sources included in the Cowboy Christmas. What are some of the creations people might see there? What kinds of work?
Everything you can think of. The vendors themselves just send their wares, and it's arranged as a big boutique or store that you can shop in. We've got jewelry and wood and Western things and Christmas decor, clothing, metal, pottery, jewelry, you name it. There's even kookin.
And I see there's all kinds of other things going on with buggy rides, trick roping. There's some activities like rope making. And will you be making some music at Cowboy Christmas? Is that part of it?
It really is not. We concentrate more on the idea of families coming and enjoying kind of an old-fashioned Christmas time and kids getting a ride on a horse or a hayrack ride or seeing Santa Claus or a petting zoo. And we even have the older people come and ride the buggy and are brought to tears with old memories from when they were growing up and experienced sleigh bells on the sleigh at Christmas time.
Well, you yourself, as we heard just a moment ago, are a musician. How long have you been playing and what kinds of gigs do you do?
I have kind of an interesting story. I've sung in a group up here in the Midwest for over 20 years, and we had a group called Sweetwater. We traveled quite a bit doing fair entertainment and conventions and that sort of thing, and then about 2 years ago, I decided that the music that was really inside me is the music that I write and live off here on the ranch with the horses and the cows. And so I started doing cowboy festivals on my own, and that's kind of the road that I'm taking right now, and I'm really loving it a lot.
We're going to hear in a few minutes the title track from your album, the song Game Horse. What inspired you to write that particular song?
I had a little help from a friend with that one. we're talking about when our horses get old, and a lot of times they've had a purpose in life, such as this was a barrel horse that we were talking about. And when their prime is over and they can no longer do what they used to do, sometimes they turn into babysitters for kids. And we were talking about this old horse that we knew that still lit up in the arena when his little babysitter girl would take him in to do the barrels, and we could just see that fire in his eyes, even though his prime was long gone. And that inspired the song, The Game Horse.
It was so sweet to listen to. I think people who haven't been around horses just don't quite get that connection you can have with a horse.
We definitely believe that. Years ago, my husband would say we thought maybe God created the horse to bring people together. And I think that's the reason we do the events here on the ranch. Our horses have done that for us. They've helped us meet people. They've put us on a horsemanship journey that we still are on today. And that was the reason this whole Cowboy Christmas started, was so that we could share our horses with others.
Well, and if an old-fashioned Christmas and arts and much more at Cowboy Christmas weren't enough, looking ahead into the new year, I see that you're also offering dance lessons at the ranch as well. Who teaches those and what kinds of dance?
We are very blessed parents, and we have some talented kids. And I have a daughter who teaches dance. She teaches a couple dance classes at Midland College, actually, and taught in a studio and teaches in Omaha as well. And so every winter, we transform our barn a lot up here into concert halls and Cowboy Christmas and dance halls. And so she comes up in the wintertime once a month on the weekends and teaches foxtrot, two-step waltz, jitterbug, all those old-time dances.
Jan Schifferl has joined me to talk about Cowboy Christmas at the Schifferl Ranch in northeast Nebraska, south of Menominee and about northeast of Crofton by a little ways. Cowboy Christmas is November 24th and 25th. Jan is also a musician, and her album is The Game Horse. We'll have a link on the Friday Live page to more information about Cowboy Christmas and all of the things that you hear about here on Friday Live as well. Jan, a pleasure talking with you.
Hey, I appreciate the opportunity.
And as I said, we'll hear another excerpt from Jan's CD with her track Game Horse here on NET Radio's Friday Live. I'm Genevieve Randall.
The little girl did not care to know his age, it seems. She only knew that this horse was the game horse of
music in Loop City and Omaha, still to come here on NET Radio's Friday Live. Next, Lincoln Symphony Orchestra presents a program called Mozart and Beethoven tonight at 7:30 p.m. at the Lead Center. Music director Ed Polichick, who will also be conducting, of course, tonight, and guest pianist Mark Clinton, who is soloing, both here this morning to tell us about the concert. Good morning.
Good morning. On this fabulously wintry morning. I'm so excited about the snow and the cold and the wind.
The windows are starting to fog over here at the mill.
Of course. look what we have in this room.
All the hot air in the room. So, and the orchestra actually welcomes not only one, but two guests for tonight's concert.
That's correct.
Who's your guest on the first piece, and what is the piece?
Well, this is a commitment that we made many, many years ago. Every season we do a side-by-side with Lincoln's Youth Symphony. And it just so happens that our principal violist, Clark Potter, is the director of that. So what's really funny about this, since it's a side-by-side, and we put all the young musicians in the principal positions, et cetera, et cetera. So
for
Clark
Veterans Day,
Potter
this
is
Sunday,
playing associate
Omaha
tonight.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's cool.
And we selected a piece that's extremely popular, but I think unbelievably challenging, especially for young musicians. This is not an easy piece of music, although I think most people, because they know it so well, think, oh, just a little piece of fluff or whatever. Rossini's Overture to William Tell.
Right.
You know, it's the Lone Ranger. It's every Looney Tunes favorite theme.
But it's a lot of notes.
Oh,
And take some technique.
And if you know it from the beginning, because we're going to do the entire overture, it's a significant overture, it has unbelievable mood changes. It's actually like a little dramatic, a drama in itself.
And that takes that expressive skill.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, this, like, for example, the opening cello, unbelievably difficult solo is by Eric. I'm sorry, I don't know his last name. I'm just getting to know their first names. And he will be he'll be featured in that. You know, so, you know, the English horn is featured. There are some incredibly wonderful virtuosic and beautiful moments that, of course, burst forth ultimately into that very upbeat Lone Ranger theme.
And how exciting for those students to really get to play that at
Absolutely.
The Lead Center alongside the Symphony Orchestra in their town.
That's right.
Now, that is followed by a symphony by Mozart. Which one is that?
This is going to be...
It's a little bit lesser known.
Right. It's one of the last three symphonies. We're going to do 39 of 39, 40, 41. I always look at those as great bed partners. But, you know... number 40, the G minor. It's a bird, it's a plane. No, it's Mozart. You know, that one. And the Jupiter, number 41. That's, look, I couldn't play, I couldn't sing. I became a conductor.
I like that.
Those last two, of course, are very well known, very popular. But 39, not so much. And and really, it ranks up there with 40 and 41. And in many ways, because of its lesser exposure to performances, makes it even more difficult to present and to play.
And Mark, you were talking about your introduction to this symphony as well, even though it's not something you're playing on.
Well, no. Years ago, I wrote a paper for a Forman analysis class when I was in grad school, on that piece. And again, I didn't really know it as well as 40 or 41 at the time, and it just opened up a new world for me. It's such a fascinating piece and unusual in so many ways.
And it's not just technically difficult. It is musically very challenging to figure out what to do with this symphony. And that's where I'm so proud of our orchestra. I think our LSO players are just in a new level of artistic making. It's great. It's just fabulous. And then after intermission...
Yes,
ta-da.
You get to play a concerto. Tell us
I
about
do.
This Beethoven that you're playing.
So Beethoven 4th Piano Concerto. Ed and I talked a lot about it in the last few weeks, but probably one of the lesser played concertos. It doesn't get quite as much airtime as the Emperor number 3, even the first.
Minor, even the first.
Yeah.
Don't you find it odd that, like the symphonies, it's the odd numbers that tend to get the expression?
That is
and they're all great. They're all great.
And it's to me, I've recently sort of investigated, done a little background research and discovered a book that explains this concerto in terms of being a retelling of the Orpheus legend based on its classical conception by Ovid. And I've always been aware that the second movement was extremely unusual and that it had some kind of relationship to that story, but there's actually a suggestion that the whole concerto really does sort of tell the larger story. And so I think that maybe explains a little the difference in the feel of this concerto from the other four.
Well, yeah. I mean, just the very opening of the concerto.
Oh, yeah.
The
well,
first
I get to start for a change. Yeah.
In a very quiet, almost understated manner, he maps out the whole concerto in the first five bars,
right,
and it's mapped out in the piano, and then off goes the orchestra into this huge
big orchestral
episode. Yeah.
So often you get a big orchestra intro and then the soloist comes in, right? But this is
and I think it's
different.
Even harder because the pianist in this piece has to sit down and play this really beautiful introspective opening, and then if it doesn't go well you have to sit there for the entire orchestral exposition. You know, that's the problem.
You know, I'll tell you, Genevieve, that Mark, I felt like I was back in school. Mark opened an enormous door for me about this whole Orpheus legend thing. And so he gave me a book. I had to read an entire book before I could actually come out here to Lincoln.
I told him he had to do his homework.
I guess you did.
And I'm actually fascinated by it.
Well, that makes me wonder, who gets to program when it's a concerto? Does the soloist choose? We haven't talked about that on the show before.
Great question.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, because when I asked Mark, when we were talking, talk, and I said, you know, this was last season. I said, let's do something. And he said, oh, I'd really like to do... I think you did mention Beethoven before, but I forgot about that part. And so I asked him to do the third piano concerto, which is one... That's kind of my... Sure, that's the one that I tend to gravitate toward.
And let's just say I really lobbied for four, and the maestro was kind enough to acquiesce. Yes, he was. And we agreed that next time we'll do three.
Okay. Yeah.
Exactly. There's a little negotiation going on there behind the scenes.
I think we're just working backwards, because the last time...
We did five
We did the Emperor last time, and now we're four. Right.
Well, it could just become a Beethoven countdown for you.
That's right. I think that's a good way to look
at
it.
Yeah.
Well, Lincoln Symphony Orchestra featuring Mark Clinton playing a Beethoven piano concerto number 4 on their Mozart and Beethoven concert, as well as music by Rossini with the Lincoln Youth Symphony here in town. Ed Polichick conducting. The concert is at 7:30 p.m. in the Lead Center in Lincoln. There is a pre-concert chat at 6:45. I will be there.
I will be there with bells on. I can't wait. It'll be fun.
Mark and Ed, thanks for coming to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Heard a question you liked, but then spaced out during my guest answer? Take a second listen to Friday Live. We podcast the show each week, and you can look for that later this afternoon on our Facebook page or on our website. The address is netnebraska.org. A week from tomorrow, Saturday, November 17th, the Polish Heritage Center in Ashton will present Rick Polary at the Loop City Community Center, playing Polish bagpipes, among other things. The free will donation concert and presentation is at 2 p.m. Rick Polary is a singer, songwriter, a multi-instrumentalist. He's also done some broadcasting work as well. He's interviewed and played with Pete Seeger and performed all over the world. And he joins me right now to talk about his Nebraska appearance. Rick Polary, welcome to Friday Live.
Oh, I'm really pleased to be here today and to talk to the listeners about something that probably they don't have too much experience with.
My first curiosity, Rick, is how you got hooked up with a gig here in Nebraska.
I started working with LOT Polish Airlines, developed these tours so that we could bring Americans to Poland to learn about the old Polish folk traditions and put a little bit of money in their pockets as far as the artists so that it could get them through those hard times. And we did it for a number of years, and it was very interesting. So one of the people who took that tour, she contacted me about doing this special program over in Omaha and in Loop City. So that's how it all started.
We heard just a little excerpt at the beginning of our chat there from a track titled Guralu, I think. You can say the full title.
Guralu Chichi Nezhao.
We'll hear something from a track titled Shumi in just a few minutes from now. Can you tell us a little bit about those tunes and some of the other tunes you'll play?
The Guralu Chichi Nezhao is one that a lot of Polish Americans know. And I did it in a very kind of Americanized way, combining some of my influence with working with Pete Seeger, of making it, you know, very accessible to English listeners. And so I tell the little story behind it. But it's really about, you know, the idea of the immigrant and how they had to leave their homeland, not because they wanted to, but to survive. And what a timely subject that is today. Mm. And it's the same thing with my own family. My mother came from Poland. She came here not knowing how to speak the language. So when I went back to Poland back in 1984, I lived there to learn about the traditions of Polish folklore. And I had to do the reverse process that my mom did. So I had to go there and only speak Polish and try to live that kind of lifestyle, just like she tried to assimilate into the American lifestyle back in the 1950s.
Many people think of the bagpipes as Scottish, but there are many folk traditions with similar instruments. Do you want to talk about the Polish version of the bagpipes?
The bagpipes go all the way back to India, you know, and they went along the trade routes, and they every different country picked them up and created their own kind of folk tradition with them. So you have bagpipes in Scotland and Ireland and Italy and in China and Africa. Each one of them is very different. And the Poles actually have five different types of bagpipes. And what makes them different is they use the body of the goat with the hair on it sometimes. Sometimes the hair is turned in, sometimes it's left out. They carve this wild goat head on the chanter, or the top of the instrument, to remind you of the spirit of the goat. When I saw a picture in a National Geographic magazine back in the late 1970s, it blew my mind. I never saw anything like it. And that's what began this big odyssey. And it took a long time to track down someone who could tell me more about it. I ended up writing to people, anybody who had any kind of Polish connection, trying to learn about these Polish bagpipes. And in 1980, one of my letters found its way to the Polish consulate, and they told me about this wonderful festival called the Rzeszów World Festival. And so in 1980, I got invited over to Poland to play American folk music on my five-string banjo and guitar, which I had been doing, you know, a lot at that point, in hopes of meeting a Polish bagpiper, which I did. And I met with Józef Broda, and he's from Istebna, Poland. I met him at the festival. He taught me a little bit on the bagpipes, but he said, "We don't teach bagpipes to tourists." No, if you are sincere, you must come to Poland and live here and be just like us. So that got me excited, you know. So I had these pipes that I was just learning how to play. At one of the festivals, I had brought the bagpipes along, and Pete Seeger was very interested in that I was trying to do this. And he basically said that, you know, if you need help to learn how to play these better, let me know and I'll see what I can do. And I got the idea of getting a grant together. And I was rejected many times for this grant, but I did get a fellowship from the Kościuszko Foundation in 1984. I live with Józef Broda and all of the people from the village of Istebna, Poland, and that's how I learned how to play the pipes.
I grew up listening to Pete Seeger, and I really would love to know what it was like to meet him and play with him.
Pete was my mentor. I knew him for, 40 years. Learned from him directly how to play things on the banjo and work with him in different projects. And he was exactly what you think of Pete Seeger would be like. He lived in a log cabin up in Beacon, New York. And he would chop wood, and I would go over and help him, you know, stack wood. And he would invite people to come and make maple syrup with him. And then you'd sit around in his house and play songs together. It was the real deal with Pete. He's one of those people that is a treasure.
Rick Polary, he is going to be in Nebraska. He'll play in Loop City. That's at 2 p.m. on November 17th. A presentation at the Loop City Community Center, which is presented in collaboration with Ashton's Polish Heritage Center. Rick's performance will cover musical traditions of Poland. Rick, a pleasure talking with you.
Oh, it's been really great, and I'm looking forward to meeting all the wonderful people of Nebraska.
Informing and inspiring with unique programming, this is NET Radio. Omaha Area Youth Orchestra has a concert this Sunday. KVNO's Corbin Hirschhorn tells us about it.
For Veterans Day this Sunday, the Omaha Area Youth Orchestra will perform at the Strategic Air Command and Aerospace Museum, and it's the first time that the organization has put together a show for the occasion. Aviva Siegel, music director of OAYO.
This is an entirely new project for us. We're sort of rethinking our schedule in terms of our students' very, very busy lives. We know that this time of year they start having things like the Nebraska All-State Orchestra, then it's Thanksgiving, then they get into final projects and finals, and we're like, how can we avoid that time? So we kind of retooled the calendar a little bit, and then when we realized, oh, November 11th, that's a great day for a concert, we thought, that is a great day for a Salute to Service concert.
The concert, Salute to Service, will be performed by students from third grade to high school, featuring both orchestras and chamber ensembles. In addition to some patriotic favorites, OAYO will perform other American classics and a violin concerto by Dmitri Kabalevsky, with soloist and concert competition winner, high school student Stephen Pruce.
It's going to be a wonderful concert. In terms of the American favorites, we'll have America the Beautiful, we'll have the National Emblem March, of course, the Star-Spangled Banner. So each of the orchestras will play a more traditional American patriotic tune, but we'll also have some wonderful pieces such as the Copland Old American songs.
OAYO has another special guest for this weekend's concert, an Opera Omaha singer who has been working with the ensemble, part of the company's Holland Community Opera Fellowship.
We have a wonderful, wonderful soloist from Opera Omaha, Jose Maldonado, and he is just the consummate musician. What I love to point out to my musicians when we're working with him is a lot of what he does is he just sings what's on the page, which is an amazing thing when you actually get every single decrescendo and the dynamic and the feeling of it. It's really, really, truly beautiful and inspiring for our musicians. The more they listen to him, the more they really rise to the musicianship level.
OAYO's concert, Salute to Service, is this Sunday at 6 p.m. at the Strategic Air Command and Aerospace Museum. Tickets for the concert will include a museum pass. For more information, visit oayo.org. For Friday Live, I'm Corbin Hirshhorn.
Coming up this morning on NET Radio, classical music on Morning Concert, and this afternoon, Laura Black and Classics by Request. Be sure to visit the NET website for more information about next week's special broadcast from NET, and for podcasts of the show, that's at netnebraska.org/radio. Thanks to everyone who makes Friday Live possible, including Josie Sittig, engineer James DeShano, and associate producer Dave Hughes. I'm Genevieve Randall.
Support for programming on NET Radio comes from the Arts for the Soul series, with a concert in remembrance of victims of violence, featuring the First Presbyterian Choir, the UC Singers of Union College, and narrated by Pippa White. Sunday, November 11th at 7 p.m., First Presbyterian Church in Lincoln. For tickets, fpclincoln.org. Also, support comes from History Nebraska. Nebraska archaeologists work side by side with private landowners to protect Nebraska's archaeological heritage. To learn more, history.nebraska.gov. And Sheldon Museum of Art, presenting Shop Sheldon, with an opportunity to purchase handcrafted items directly from local artisans and makers, Wednesday, November 14th from 4 to 8 p.m. in the museum's Great Hall. For more information, sheldonartmuseum.org.